standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask questions at that time, press star, then one. Also, this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to your host, Mr. Sridhar Guni. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Matt. Welcome, everybody, to the Accelerated Value Program Expert Call Series. This is a new avenue of knowledge sharing exclusively available for AVP clients. This call, as Matt mentioned, is being recorded and will be available for download at a later time, along with the presentation. Today's topic is WebSphere DBM Error Handling and Solution Recovery, and the presenter is Brian Brown. Brian is an advisory engineer with the U.S. DBM SWAT team. He has 19 years of experience in software engineering field, including 10 years of implementing WebSphere business integration and process management software. Brian's areas of expertise is DBM performance and deep technical solution using DBM. He is an author of the IBM Red Book, Building IBM Business Process Management Solutions Using WebSphere Version 7 and Business Space. With that introduction, I would like to turn the presentation over to Brian. Brian.
Hi. Thank you, Sridhar. So this presentation is titled WebSphere BPM Error Handling and Solution Recovery. The session was originally done by a peer of mine, Jeff Brent, at Impact, and I'm going to walk through it today with the folks on the call. Can you go over to slide two, please? So what are the objectives of this call? My purpose here is to answer some of your questions about error handling strategy and to talk about the various stages in error handling strategy, recognize, record, and react. Slide three, please. So the good and bad news is that Murphy's Law is alive and well. Things that can go wrong will definitely go wrong. And as we know in software engineering, things that are going to go wrong are certainly going to go wrong. Let's consider a typical service-oriented architecture solution that interacts, you know, with both internal and external services. There are typical errors that happen all the time at all levels of the system, but are often missed during our design phase, such as services becoming available due to a network failure or regular offline maintenance. Just recently, I was at a customer who had two data centers, one on one end of town and one on the other. And those data centers are connected with a fiber optic channel or fancy networking system. And lo and behold, they were doing some road work outside, out the building, and the road work crew cut the network cable that connected the two buildings. And so we lost one half of our, essentially, of our cell, and it wreaked all kinds of havoc in the system. So the purpose of that example is to show that although we might all sit down when we're designing our system and say, well, don't worry, network problems aren't going to happen, or don't worry, we have this great networking system, there's no issues, let's be aware that things can happen and will. Another example is that our database systems go offline for maintenance, you know, on a regular basis. Our DBAs might take the system down for a backup and recovery on a weekly basis or monthly, and if we don't plan ahead for those kind of outages, we might ourselves within our system take an outage. What are some other examples of things that can go wrong? Certainly, bad data. We can't anticipate everything that a customer might enter into a system. We might not anticipate encoding issues or character set issues. We may not plan ahead for application errors, such as divide by zero in our coding, or maybe null pointer exceptions, or string index out of bounds exceptions, those kind of things that may be the fault of the programmer, but we should anticipate those ahead of time, that they may occur. Requests that appear hung, for example. So if we send a request response operation to an external system, we submit our request and we don't receive a response. Well, what does that mean? Is our response still incoming? Is the work still being processed? Or did they not receive the request at all? The point is that we need to engineer for failures ahead of time. Slide 4, please. So why do I need an error handling strategy? The reason we need a strategy is we want to standardize our development practices. The lack of standardization leads to instability and unnecessary gap in the transactional integrity of our system. It's especially common when we have production projects that grow from a pilot or a proof of concept. Generally, when we're building a pilot or a proof of concept, we're more concerned about the demo or the happy path of the system, and we're not thinking ahead to how to handle errors in the system. An error handling strategy also promotes consistent and successful recovery of our business transactions and data. Slide 5, please. Next slide, please. So what makes up an error handling strategy? An error handling strategy is developed by understanding our business needs and how we do development. Can you back up the slide, please, Sridhar? Can we go back to slide 5, please?
It's actually on slide 5. I think the numbers are off by a number. I think your PowerPoint has like 4 and mine might have 5. So do you want me to go back or forward?
This is the correct side now.
Okay.
By developing these patterns and these patterns of an error handling strategy, by developing these patterns, our developers can quickly assemble their applications using our patterns. And make sure that they provide and consume services from common endpoints. The strategy will enable us and establish a recovery framework and standards that we can enforce to ensure that everyone is using our error handling strategy and framework. Next slide, please. Well, what team develops the error handling strategy? Who are the persons that develop the error handling strategy? In general, the SOA architects on your team are responsible for defining that strategy and for the service interactions. It's their responsibility to make sure your system meets the non-functional requirements and promotes a system of recovery and data integrity. And also, you want to, what's not mentioned on the slide is it meets your SLA agreements. The architects and developers should work together and define a service error handling mechanism that conforms with the error handling strategy. Next slide, please. When do we as a team sit down and develop an error handling strategy? Certainly, if we're live, it may already be too late, right? If we're encountering errors in our system now because we're on the last phase of testing, then it may already be too late to create an error handling strategy. Error handling and prevention is most often overlooked and not captured in our non-functional requirements. Our recommendation is these strategies should be developed in the design phase of the system, and it should be positioned to leverage our patterns and promote recovery of the system and good problem determination. Next slide, please. So where do we start? What we need to do is define our objectives and service level agreements that we need to meet for our system and create an error handling and recovery strategy for that. Let's gather the requirements from the business, the IT team, the operations team. How should the system behave? What data do we need to persist? What is the transactionality of our system? What are our levels of SLA? The creation of the error handling strategy will feed into our development process. It'll feed into our operations manuals that we give our operations folks and our IT folks, and it will help us develop our recovery procedures. Next slide, please. The three objectives of error handling are to recognize the errors where they occur, to record what errors and problems are occurring, and to be able to react appropriately to the errors in the system. Next slide. Recognizing that there is a problem is the first line of defense for a system. Our application should be developed and structured in such a way that any exceptions that do occur are properly classified. The strategy of classification is critical so that we understand what conditions are important and what maybe are of a lower priority. In a system, generally, there are two types. There are declared exceptions that we expect, such as, you know, this withdrawal exceeds the balance in the customer's account, or zip code hasn't been provided and that's a required field. And there are undeclared exceptions, such as we just had a network outage and we can't connect to the database, or there has been no response from this service within 3 minutes, or within our timeout. Next slide. Then generally, there are two classes of error detection for service development. We want to check internal sanity check type errors, such as I want to make sure this user is actually a valid user of our system. I want to make sure this customer actually exists in the database. And there are external errors, such as the web service you're calling is no longer online or not receiving requests. A well-designed service needs to consider both classes of errors. Next slide, please. After determining which types of errors can be expected to occur, there are a variety of tools and techniques available to the developers to be able to identify errors and to classify them within our application. Our error handling strategy should define which methods we're going to use, when to use them, based on our requirements, our design, and our architecture. Next slide, please. So what are some techniques for recognizing exceptions? If we are using BPEL, what we want to use, BPEL in Webster Process Server, for example, we want to use fault handlers. When we have BPELs to choreographer our service invocations, we want to use the fault handler capability of BPELs to define in our business process both modeled and unmodeled faults, so both expected and unexpected errors. Fault handlers in BPELs can even be configured to catch all, for example. So although we might define our fault handlers to handle those expected errors, such as the customer no longer has any money in their account, or there's a required field missing, we should also define a fault handler as a catch-all to make sure we handle any unexpected errors. Next slide, please. Within Webster Process Server, there are a number of built-in faults. These faults should be used and understood by the development team and used where appropriate. Additionally, if you go to our BPC sample sites, you will see a number of samples on how to define your own faults and error handling routines. Slide 15, please. How do we recognize exceptions if we're not using BPELs? Well, if we're using a Webster ESB system, for example, and using mediation flow components, then what we want to use is the failure nodes and unmodeled faults. So within WESB, within the tooling, we provide a capability to handle both declared and undeclared faults. And these allow you to define how your mediation will behave when a fault occurs. In WESB, it's fairly straightforward. You just wire from the fault handlers to the appropriate callout or component that handles the error. And you'll see an example on this slide. Next slide, please. What about when I'm using a POJO or some other Java component? Well, certainly in Java, we have the capability of a try-catch block. So within our Java methods, we should implement try-catch blocks to handle both those defined faults that we're expecting, and also to catch runtime exceptions, the undeclared or unexpected errors. Within Webster Process Server, within the programming model, there are two classes or base classes of exceptions. There are service runtime exceptions. These are unexpected errors, and they're created by the runtime engine itself. And there are service business exceptions. These are the declared and expected errors, the so-called modeled errors. Next slide, please. Once we recognize what error has occurred, is now important to record that exception. Recording the data of the exception is essential for problem determination, because without the information of what happened and what it affected, we won't be able to do proper problem determination in the React phase. Our error handling strategy should definitely consider the differences between recording business-level events and IT events. And we should understand the audience that we are recording the error for, whether it's a business user who might be interested in the business data of the exception, or an IT administrator or IT developer. An IT developer or an administrator is probably not going to be that concerned about the business-level data that occurred, especially if this is a large stack dump, for example. The mechanism that we use to record the incident will likely be different in each case. So we should understand our audience that we're recording the error for to determine how and what information to record. Next slide. In general, IT events can be recorded to the log or emitted to an IT monitoring product like Tivoli, for example, or some sort of system that is probing your logs. Since problem determination activities that may occur after this exception require a precise and detailed record of what happens, the volume of the detail we choose to record may be better suited to a log or a collector. So if a particular exception is going to generate a huge volume of information, it's not going to be suitable to pop up on the screen, for example. This is better information to be dropped to a log or a trace log that can be analyzed after the fact. All of our projects should, and our error handling strategy should, set up a common logging framework and standard to be used across the board. Within WebSphere Process Server, we use the JSR 47, which is the logging, the common logging standard for Java. And this allows the logging levels to be configured by the admin console and consistently logged to the same location as the WebSphere logs themselves. Slide 19, please. When we develop our standard, we should define the frequency and the depth of our log entries. There are many things to consider. Do we want to log at each point in our system, at each method? For example, the entry and exit of that method. If we do that, what level of logging is that going to be turned on all the time, or are we going to have different levels of logging that we can standardize, for example, finer, finest, debug, so that there is some way to limit the amount or increase the amount of logging that occurs, you know, dynamically. Slide 20, please. In the case of business events, these can be emitted in a WebSphere environment using the Common Event Infrastructure, or CEI. It is important that we establish a standard for when and where and why and how these business events are emitted. If we emit too little or too much, we will have different but very adverse effects. If we emit too much, then it's going to generate load on our system, and it's going to cause us problems in problem determination. If we don't emit enough, we may not have enough data to determine what the problem was. So there is a trade-off of how much data is the right amount to emit using CEI. Next slide, please. The third stage of an error handling strategy is to react. In general, the principles of reacting correctly are to first make sure that the system is in a consistent state and that we can report the exception to the appropriate groups and teams within our organization, and we can trigger a corrective action. Well, what do we mean by corrective action? I mean, for example, an automated recovery system or triggering a manual corrective procedure, such as perhaps when this error occurs, a human task is initiated so that someone can receive that task and modify the data appropriately and resubmit the task. Or maybe we have manual scripts that go out and correct the error that occurred. The third type of corrective action may be to use an alternate path to process this message. So maybe our procedure failed and now we have an alternate path in our BPEL to handle that error. The key is to not panic. If we have an error handling strategy, then we have a plan. Everyone will be on board with that plan, and all we need to do is execute. Slide 22, please. Automated recovery within our error handling strategy implies that where possible, our application should automatically ensure that our system is in a consistent and predictable state. To do this, we should use transaction scopes. They need to be configured appropriately so that the state of all the resources in use are in a consistent condition. We should use XA-capable transaction, XA-capable services to create the scopes we need around our XA-capable resources. Slide 23. In the concept of reacting in an automated fashion, we can use compensation in microflows and long-running processes to undo the outcome of service invocations that have already completed, but another step down the line has failed. So we can reverse those steps. Compensation can be used when we are choreographing non-transactional services. Slide 24, please. In our long-running processes or macro flows, compensation activities that have successfully executed can be triggered by a fault raised in the process, or they can be explicitly triggered using a compensation activity in the BPEL. This is useful for reversing the effects of transactions that have already been committed within that macro flow. And we have an example on this slide. Slide 25, please. Within the system built into Webster Process Server are automatic retries. Automatic retries can be used to increase the resilience of our system to, you know, intermittent application or network errors. Webster Process Server and Webster Enterprise Service Bus provide that retry capability automatically under some circumstances, such as when we make an asynchronous invoke to SI Bus. The BPE engine does automatic retries. We have configurable retries within the mediation flow components. Next slide, please. New feature in the product is the ability to react by using store and forward. Store and forward is a quality of service for handling unexpected errors which occur to a service because the service is down. Store and forward allows us to avoid unnecessarily failed events. So in store and forward, we automatically detect that a service is down based on the runtime exceptions. In WID, we would model this as a qualifier on the interface and the specific operation. Store and forward works on all imports and handles asynchronous hops. And the failed event manager shows when store and forward has been activated. Within the admin console and business space, we have widgets. Within admin console, we have some UI components that allow you to manage the store and forward points. What will happen is if our downstream service is down, we are going to queue that data until the service comes back up, and then the events will be released. Slide 27, please. We can't anticipate all errors. So there are going to be errors in the system that cannot be handled automatically. In these cases, we may choose to have the application go into a hold and wait state until an administrator is able to manually diagnose and correct whatever occurred. Slide 28. In BPAL, this is represented by the continue on air. So in our BPAL activities, our developers can set the continue on air property of that activity to false. If that activity fails at runtime, the business process engine will transition the activity to a stop state. Within BPC Explorer, that process will show the stopped activity under the critical processes view. So if you ever looked at the critical processes tab in BPC Explorer, this is where the stopped activities show up. Those stopped activities within that UI can either be resubmitted or terminated by the administrator. Of course, this is only for macro flows. Slide 29, please. Within the system, we also have failed events, and it's important that we administer those failed events. They are automatically created by WPS, and they're stored and can be administered programmatically by the Failed Event Manager APIs. The failed event APIs are documented within InfoCenter, and we provided the link. Slide 30. When we use manual intervention, the administrators or the staff that are responsible for the manual activity need to be notified. Our error handling strategy needs to document how those notifications will be sent, how frequently should they be sent, and who is responsible for acting upon the event. That notification mechanism will likely be different based on whether the error condition is an IT-level error or it's a business-related problem. If it's an IT-level error, we're probably going to page out the operations and IT folks. If it's a business-related problem, we might get the process owners or the business analysts involved. it's important that we think about how frequently in the mechanism for those notifications. I remember a customer where we were on site to help them with a problem, and the issue that was occurring in the system was actually a small problem with a batch process. But this small problem in the batch process was generating notifications of errors. And those notifications were so many notifications that we actually brought down their email server, which caused more notifications and more problems. So it really, it spun out of control, and we took an outage of the whole system that day. So what might be a very small application error, if you multiply that by thousands of events in a batch process, and we generate too many notifications for those errors, we may well bring down our entire system. I don't think any IT or operations folk who have a pager wants to get 100 pages for one error in the system. So we have to be cognizant of that in our strategy. Next slide, please.
Brian, there is a question in the chat window. The person asks, how do we hold the application processing messages? Not sure which slide he is referring to.
I believe he's talking about hold and wait. So in hold and wait, what we're doing is we're going to define in our BTEL on a particular activity that it should not continue on air. So when we tell it to not continue on air, that activity will be marked as stop, and now it will require manual intervention of the BPEL to move it back to a running state. So I think you can imagine a system where if we get a business exception, for example, we are going to not continue on air in this activity. We're going to send out a notification, maybe a page, to the appropriate person, and that person will log on to the system, correct the data error, for example, and then move that activity back to a running state.
Thanks, Brian.
Next slide.
Before we move on, for the participants, please feel free to post your questions in the chat window. I'll be observing the chat window for any questions. If possible, please mention the slide number so that we know what is the context. As this call is being recorded, we cannot take the questions on the phone right now, but chat window should be can be used for questions. Thank you. Over to you, Brian.
Thanks. And Sridhar, I can't see the chat messages in my Lotus Live meeting, so if you can just let me know when you have one.
Sure.
Sometimes our business process accounts for certain error conditions, such as this customer does not exist. In general, these are truly business-level errors. These are not IT type errors, and they should be handled accordingly. The logic for handling these errors might be completely part of our business process, rather than require any manual intervention or recovery or moving the activity to a stop state. Maybe we can just handle that error in the try-catch block of our POJO or in a fault handler in our BPEL. Maybe we expect these kind of data errors, and we can actually have some logic in our BPEL to mitigate that problem. If we use a human-centric workflow, exception cases can be routed to a human by creating a human task and assigning it to the appropriate person. We can handle, our if if this occurs, else this occurs kind of situations using human tests. Slide 32, please. Our service level agreements will have a direct impact on the types of error handling framework that that are required. Once we establish our requirements for the framework, then we can evaluate the product capabilities for the products that we're using and leverage those capabilities for error handling recovery. Here are some examples on this slide of capabilities within the product that can be used to implement your error handling strategy. Business processes, using human tasks, using the failed event manager, emitting CEI events, and business activity monitoring using monitor. Slide 33, please. We should evaluate the services and service providers that our system connects to. Our framework can be affected by the characteristics of these services. Are they batch systems? Do they have a window of availability? Maybe those batch systems are only open from 1 to 4 p.m. And at 4, the window moves over to another system, so we're no longer able to get on. Is that service transactional? Can we guarantee assured delivery? Can we guarantee that our message is delivered once and only once? What is the reliability of the protocol that we're communicating to that service? Are we using HTTP or are we using JMS? They have different levels of reliability. Slide 34. We should evaluate each of our endpoints by a number of characteristics. Our architecture team should develop patterns and templates for dealing with our most common set of issues. For each endpoint, what is the operation type, the binding? What invocation pattern are we going to use? Is it async or sync? Are there security concerns? What is the availability of that service? Is the service slow? Do we need to set a timeout on that service? What is the performance of that service? Next slide. Within this presentation, we have a couple examples using the BPM tooling, and we'll show some examples of good and bad behavior for an error handler strategy. Next slide. So within IBM, we have this tool that we use out in the field, called the PI Analyzer. PI Analyzer allows us to take a customer's project interchange files or project interchange files from a project that we are ourselves on and submit them over the web to our analyzing tool, and it prints out a report. What's wrong with this particular picture? We have a lot of components. Certainly, everyone's done a lot of work, but have they done the correct things? Next slide. What you can see, and NPI Analyzer is pointing it out for us. Oh, step back a sec, Freeman. What we can see is that although they have 609 WSDLs or interfaces in the system, They have 41 modules. There are no faults defined in any of those WSDLs. I think if you had that number of interfaces, you would most likely have a set of model faults that should be defined. Next slide. How about this picture? What's wrong with this picture? Hopefully, when we look at our assembly diagrams, this is not what we see. This is a huge number of BPELs and other components within a single assembly diagram. The ability to detect errors and manage them through this would be very complex. Next slide. In general, how do we structure our solutions to best leverage an error handling strategy? We should think of our solution as a number of layers. We have exposition modules, which are the exposed endpoints of our service to users of our system. We have our process modules where we're doing our work. We have our service modules where we are invoking other downstream services. And we have our resource modules where our libraries and resource assets exist. If we structure the solution in layers, we can isolate errors that occur at the particular layer. So, Sridhar, if you can go back one slide. If we think about each row of this as a layer, and the last row on the right-hand side is the resource layer, for example, where it's connecting to databases, errors that occur in the resource layer can actually be handled within that layer. So if we took all the components here on the right-hand side and we moved them into their own module with a defined interface, then any errors that occur at the resource layer can be handled appropriate in the resource layer. That way, we're not trying to handle four or five different types of exceptions in this one assembly diagram. Back to slide 38, please. So let's think about when we design our system of using layers so that, first of all, that we can define our solution in a structured way, and also we can assist ourselves when we develop our error handling strategy. Next slide. And here are some examples of errors that can be handled in a particular layer. Within our process modules, we can do storm forward and handle failed events. Transaction and XA capability compensation can be handled in our service modules. In our resource modules, we can handle retry and timeouts. Next slide. So in summary, when we are in the design phase of our project, let's define an error handling strategy. Let's remember the three R's. And let's enforce the use of the error handling strategy during the implementation by executing peer reviews and proper governance of our project. Next slide. I've included some references of things that we talked about on these presentations, so feel free to, if you want to know more about the BPM samples on the BPC sample site, how to use faults or the failed event manager, and there's a selection of white papers and DevWork articles on JSR 47, compensation, things like that. With that, I'd like to turn it back to Sridhar.
Matt, you can open the lines for questions.
Thank you. At this time, if there are any questions or comments, you can press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Once again, for any questions or comments, press star, then 1.
Easy crowd.
One moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Matt Duggan. Your line is open, sir.
Thank you. I was curious about your service analyzer tool. Is that something that can be invoked by a client using IBM services, or is that something that needs an IBM consultant on site in order to leverage?
I don't believe the website is publicly available right now, but certainly as a member of the SWAT team, and I think Sridhar, as a member of Premium Support, would probably concur, as we've been pushing to have that publicly available. So hopefully soon in the future, everyone will be able to use that website and do that analysis.
Okay.
So I will take that as an action item to check on how that is going, to see when and if that will ever be made publicly available.
All right. If I could ask a small follow-up, is there a publicly available list of recommendation or a potential list of, you know, measurable concerns that could be attached to an internal analyzation?
You know,
for example, 600 services and zero faults, you know, that's kind of a point of contention with the service implementation. Is there a list of those kinds of metrics or guidelines that are available?
Right. I don't know if I've seen one other than, you know, typically in our best practice type documentation, you'll see those kind of anecdotal comments. But when I talk to the PI analyzer folks, I will ask them about that and get back to you.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. That was a good question.
Once again, to ask your question, press star, then 1. Further questions in queue.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian, for the presentation. I think a lot of people are interested in this tool. Brian is taking that as an action item, and he'll definitely follow up with the concern teams and inform me so I can actually send a follow-up email if I have something definitive. And also, please provide your feedback to me. My email address is gowney@us.ibm.com. It's on the presentation. Also, as I mentioned in the introduction, this presentation, along with the audio recording, will be available for download at a later time. And there will be an email from your accelerated value leaders and specialists to the named callers. So expect an email with the links to download for the audio and presentation. Thank you all for attending. Have a good day.
Thank you for participating in today's call. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you for calling the Digital Replay Service.